There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Welcome to Midday Mobile here on FM 106.5. This is Yaffe filling in for Sean today. I really appreciate him giving me the opportunity to do that. And it's been a little while, but awesome to be here. If you want to know more about me, it's because it's been a while. I host the Yaffe program. Now, just a reminder, Yaffe is my last name. My full name is Michael Yaffe, last name Y-A-F-F-E-E. You can actually follow me on Twitter at Yaffe if you want to find out more about me. I'm sure you've seen some of my interviews at yellowhammernews.com and stuff like that. So I'm sure you already know who I am, but just a reminder. And I appreciate Sean giving me the opportunity to host. You know, I do have to say, there's a little part of me, just a little part of me, who wanted the Supreme Court to rule the other way when it came to redistricting. Now, don't get me wrong. They got it right, at least this decision right. It would make no sense to throw the elections in turmoil now, right before a primary, which is coming up pretty soon. And the census was already late, so I understand that. And really, the whole argument is ridiculous to begin with. On my show, the Yaffe program, 9 to 11 on WVNN in Huntsville, I interviewed Lieutenant Governor Will Ainsworth. We talked about this, and we both agreed, you know, the map, they acted like, at least the district court and those fighting against the redistricting map, they acted like it was some kind of radical change or something that made it so racist. It's pretty similar to what it was before. And to act like, okay, we're going to change it. Okay. I mean, I know Jeff Poore made this point, and I do want to give him credit. He had the tweet of the day yesterday in reaction to the breaking news that the Supreme Court upheld the map, at least for now. Now, that could change because this was just a stay, and they're going to look at the case overall and what it has to do with the Voting Rights Act. But I do like what Jeff Poore tweeted. Said, that sound you heard was Terry Sewell breathing a sigh of relief. And that's what I'm talking about. Because there is a chance. Jeff Poore was saying this. Will Ainsworth was saying this. I've been saying this. There was a chance that if they went and change the maps to the way some Democrats and some of the opposition wanted it, you would have two Republicans in those seats because it would be a plurality and it would be a good chance that Democrats would win, but there was also a chance that Republicans would win both. And so when I read the opinion of Elena Kagan saying basically that this ruling gets in the way of the Voting Rights Act and black representation and so forth. You can read her rule, her dissent when it came to the Supreme Court decision. That's basically what she said. There's a little part of me that wishes the Supreme Court would have upheld what the district court did, that we would have changed the maps, and that in the long run, we would have Republicans dominate all the seats in the state, and then I could get behind the microphone and laugh very, very loudly at the fact that all the damage they did just ended up hurting them and helping Republicans. So I wonder if there's a part of Democrats that are relieved at this ruling. I wonder if that's the case. But like I said, even though this is the right ruling, even though obviously this makes sense, even though the Supreme Court, when they actually take up the full case, should side against the district court and should side with the state and side with the attorney general and keep the maps the way they are, there is a little part of me that wishes, okay, you want to throw a wrench in this? Fine. You throw a wrench into this and we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. And doing this all based on the color of skin shows the thing is, when you look at the liberal justices and what Elena Kagan said and others said, they still want you to believe and they still push a narrative that this country is very, very racist, you see. This country is still very, very racist. The Republican states are very, very racist. That all of this is about racism. And they're going to push that narrative no matter what. And just think how close we were. If it weren't for Donald Trump appointing these justices like Amy Coney Barrett and... Amy Coney Barrett, Gorsuch, and Kavanaugh. And they haven't been perfect. I'm not saying they have. But how close we were to... those three being very leftist judges, to the point where those judges would believe that a vaccine mandate on everyone is constitutional, that all Republican redistricting would have been thrown out probably in all states and called racist, and how much government executive power they would have granted control over our lives. We were very, very close. And in some way, that's pretty encouraging, right? Because a lot of times you can look at the culture today and you can look at some of the political battles going on in today's world. And I can understand why conservatives would get discouraged sometimes. It seems like sometimes we're losing. I get it. But this was a sign of how if you play the long game and you keep up the fight, even though we're losing now, you keep up the fight, you play the long game, you get persistent, that over time we can have major victories that can make a positive difference for the future of the country. And this is why, kind of connecting the dots here, this is why some of these lawsuits against mask mandates across the state of Alabama, in schools specifically, are so important. Because there might be some who said, who cares? Kids are fine with the mask and they're gonna, you know, soon the virus will be gone. We'll get rid of it. You don't have to wear the masks anymore. It'll be fine. There might be some of that going on. And by the way, I have a feeling the courts, a lot of these courts are trying to do that. They're trying to delay any kind of decision on any of this stuff because, and I, you know, I'm in Huntsville. There's a case in Huntsville. There's a case just brought up in Madison County for Madison City Schools. There's almost an attempt to like delay some of this stuff because they think, okay, eventually people will forget about it. The mask mandates will be over with anyway, and we can just kind of move on. But the reason why the fight is important and we still have to keep up the fight is because we don't want to set the precedent that they can have that much power and they can have that much control over our lives, over our children's lives, and they can ruin schools. Because there is already talk about having masks and stuff during flu season. There's already talk, you know, if we're going to have a COVID season every year, like we have a flu season because COVID is endemic, there's already talk out there that we're going to have to do this every season. So they're going to want to bring it back eventually if cases go up because we can't just seem to understand that this is endemic now and we need to move on with our lives. Get vaccinated if you want to. Don't get vaccinated. Let's move on with our lives if you want to. But they're going to want to bring this back. It wasn't that long ago where the Alabama Department of Public Health put out a tweet and others, the CDC as well, put out tweets and messages saying that the reason why flu numbers were low was because of all the mitigation efforts. Now, there is no evidence to support that. That is pure speculation. Pure speculation. There is no direct evidence to support that the masking, social distancing, all the mitigation efforts we did for COVID is the reason why we had less flu cases in the past couple of years. There's no, that's all speculation. They're connecting dots based purely on speculation there. But even beyond that, why would you put out that message? Why would you put out a message saying we need to masks work at preventing the flu? Why would they do that in the first place? Well, the main reason they would do that in the first place is to set the precedent that when flu numbers do go up and we get stronger flu seasons, possibly in the next couple of years, what are they going to want to do? Well, we learned this from COVID, right? We better get those masks back on our children, right? That's why they're putting that out there, to set the precedent that it worked for the flu. So we're going to do this all over again, either for future COVID variants, which are inevitable, or for future flu variants. Now, just so you know, there is some science out there to suggest that the reason why flu numbers were low is because viruses compete with one another. And when you have a dominant virus like a COVID outcompeting the flu virus, you get a lower amount of flu cases. And that's the main reason why. It has nothing to do with masking or anything else. There's evidence to suggest that, but they're gonna say that because they have the precedent, they have the control, they want to make it look like they're doing something. And if they're not going to do this for COVID in the future, they're going to do this for the flu. So that's why these fights against things like mask mandates now are so important, even for the future. If it doesn't accomplish something in the short term, which I want it to, at least it will accomplish something in the future. And by the way, I know I'm not the only one saying this, but when you're talking about masking young children, a lot of people talk about the mental health aspects of all of this. And we know that's true. But the reason why I believe it's damaging to the mental health of young people in this country, and probably not just young people, probably people of all ages, but young people specifically, is think about it. We're telling young people, we're sending a message to them in schools that you need to be deathly afraid of a virus that they should not be deathly afraid of. That if they don't do these certain things, you could kill grandma, or you could die, or you could spread it and kill your friend. And none of that is true, especially when it comes to kids. So where you've sent something into their head, in their minds, that they should be deathly afraid of something, when the stats show that young kids are not threatened nearly as much by COVID-19 as older populations and vulnerable populations. But they're going to have it in their heads. You're telling me that's not going to have mental health effects in the long run, in the future? Of course it is. Of course it is. Now, there's other mental health effects as well, but that's the main one I think about. We're setting a message of fear on young people based on something they shouldn't be afraid of, and we're already having a problem of depression and anxiety disorders and other mental health problems with kids even before COVID, and we have made it that much worse. So we're going to talk about this. Speaking of schools, by the way, I do want to talk about school choice after the break. We'll take a break here in just a moment. After the break, I want to talk about the fact that school choice should be coming to Alabama, but it doesn't look like it is. And Cameron Smith will be joining me at the bottom of the hour as well. And we'll talk more about school choice, the Parents' Choice Act, which I support. And we need true leadership on that issue. And I'm not seeing it. I'm really not seeing it. You're listening to Midday Mobile. This is Yaffe filling in for Sean Sullivan. We'll be back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back to Midday Mobile. This is Yaffe filling in for Sean Sullivan. You can usually hear me in Huntsville. And you can listen online, WVNN.com. What you really want to do, listen to all the hosts on FM Talk 106.5. And then check the podcast of the Yaffe program. Just like the Yaffe Facebook page, or just Google the Yaffe program podcast and you'll find it. I mean, you can catch my interview earlier today I had with Lieutenant Governor Ainsworth, and also a parent who is suing a school system up here because of a mask mandate. So you can check that out. Now, one thing I really do want to talk about, though, and has been a big issue of mine, is school choice. Because it really frustrates me that we can't have any kind of true leadership on this. And the reason why this issue frustrates me, because it's another example of Alabama being complacent and its Republican domination of the state. And what I mean by that is I think because Republicans dominate so much that they get comfortable. And they get complacent. And yeah, they'll do some conservative things, but they're not going to do bold conservative steps because they really don't have to. They're going to get the votes anyway. And they're not going to have the competition from the Democrats. So we get complacent and we don't show true leadership and we end up being last on some of these conservative issues where I believe we should be first. Whether it's constitutional carry, we were behind on some of the COVID stuff. And we're also now behind when it comes to school choice, where all these states around us are doing these conservative things. And then we're like, well, now maybe we should do that. And this goes all the way to the top. I'm sorry. I understand Kay Ivey was not meant to be the bold conservative leader, but she was supposed to be the steady hand. But I want a bold conservative leader who's going to lead on school choice. But when I see the legislature looking at the Parents' Choice Act by Senator Del Marsh, and I see Ledbetter, the majority leader, say on Jeff Poore's show that, well, a lot of this is a little too late. It doesn't really help his district. And then I also see that they add amendments to the Parents' Choice Act, where, yeah, we'll have school choice, but there'll be testing requirements. We're going to make private schools and homeschoolers teach to the test because that has gone so well in public school. And then I see the governor sign a school choice proclamation, but then that's about it. Doesn't really talk about this or anything else. I get frustrated. I get frustrated because I want real bold reform because it's not working. The education system right now isn't working in this state. And yet the legislature, it's amazing to see the Alabama legislature so protective of a system that we all agree is failing. You talk to any legislator, Democrat, Republican, whatever, and they'll admit, yes, Alabama education, the system is failing. Okay, well, about school choice? No, 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 we have to protect the system. You just told me the system was failing. Oh, but public schools and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, is your opposition to school choice really about helping students and parents? Or is it about protecting the public school monopoly? My interest, because people say, oh, this could take away the power of the public school system. This could take away funding from the public school system. Look, maybe it will. My interest is not protecting the public school monopoly, the government school monopoly. It's not my interest. My interest is to put forward reforms that gives students and parents options so they have better education opportunities in this state. That's what I'm really focused on, and that's why I believe in school choice. But you have to understand there's a difference of philosophy here with a lot of people. It's just like in healthcare. When you look at Democrats on the left when it comes to healthcare, they want government-controlled single-payer healthcare system because they believe that a government system is what's best for everyone. So they're going to push it down our throats. They believe that with education. They believe in the philosophy that government can solve the problems, government control can solve the problems, and we're going to push a lot of this onto people because they believe in that philosophy. So they have it for education. They want to do the same thing for healthcare. When people like me, conservatives, we believe in options. We believe in the free market. We believe in competition. We believe in accountability. We believe in choices. And we believe in freedom, individual freedom, family freedom, student freedom, and that's it. I'm not here to protect the government school monopoly. I am here to push for something, reforms, bold reforms, that will actually help students and parents have more options. So Cameron Smith has a great column on this, on school choice, why we need it in our schools. So we're going to talk to him next. We'll probably, we're going to hopefully get a chance to take your phone calls as well later on in the show. You're listening to Midday Mobile. I am Yaffe filling in for Sean Sullivan. Thanks to him for letting me fill in today. And give us a call, 251-343-0106. We'll be back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back to Midday Mobile here on FM Talk 106.5. This is Yaffe filling in for Sean Sullivan. I really appreciated him giving me the opportunity to talk with you guys once again. I know I filled in before, but if you don't know who I am the host of the Yaffe program, 9 to 11 a.m. Monday through Friday on WVNN in Huntsville. Now, in the last segment, I was talking a little bit about school choice, and Cameron Smith had a great column on this at AL.com. I mean, here's the title. Marsh's Parent Choice Act challenges the tragic status quo in Alabama education. It went over a lot of facts about the failures in Alabama's education system and a lot of the misconceptions when it comes to choices in this state. So Cameron Smith is joining me on the show right now. Cameron, how are you, sir?
I'm great. And hey, these people down here, they'll like you. They are good folks. So you're in good stead.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. So one thing I really like that you said in the column said, when it comes to public education in Alabama, the answer has perpetually been to work around the margins while protecting the existing public education infrastructure. And that's kind of what I said. It's amazing how protective they are of a system that we all agree is failing. So I want you to expand on that a little bit.
Well, just imagine your house is on fire and you say, well, let's water the garden. I mean, like, yeah, okay, that is a possible response to your house being on fire, but it doesn't really solve the problem. It just kind of is something on the periphery that's good to do. And that's been the story of school choice, whether it's the Accountability Act and the tax credit scholarships, magnet schools, charter schools. It's the bulk of kids in Alabama that are underserved by the public education system, and we know this. This isn't controversial. This is accurate, aren't producing the educational results that most parents want to see, that anybody could be particularly proud of. And yet the issue is always, let's do something else on the side.
Yeah, and I agree with you on that. Another thing you said that I think is really interesting, you also said the existing public education options, because there are some options already in place, and we can talk about that. You said they're necessary but not sufficient. They fail to address the normalized failure delivered to the majority of Alabama's students. So what were you talking about there?
So if for example, if you say, I'm in a rural school district in Alabama and I don't have an AP course that I want my child to take, well, Alabama Access may have that course. There's a digital offering online. In fact, there's Alabama Virtual Academy. There are ways that if you just wanted to do online public education as your child's baseline educational process, you can do that in Alabama. Those assets and resources exist. Again, those are good things. I mean, particularly for folks dealing with the pandemic, the fact that that infrastructure was already there to tap into is great. But that's just, again, a lot of parents aren't saying, you know what I really want after a whole pandemic is virtual public school for my kids. I just like a different schooling option, period. And that's what Del Marsh is trying to do.
Yeah. And we'll go over some of Del Marsh's bill in a moment and the amendments that they're adding to it and so forth. But why is it so hard to get this done in Alabama?
Because work is hard when you're a legislator, apparently. I've got a column coming out tomorrow that points out, because Representative Ledbetter, the Alabama majority leader in the House, said, well, you know, this may be late in the process. We only have 25 days in the session to figure this out. We just, a shotgun approach might not be it. And I hear that, but this is the same legislature that just spent over $7 million in federal pandemic funds in 5 days. So if you're telling me time is an issue, you've got five times as many days to spend half as much money as you just did, but it's tough. Yeah, tell me about that in an election year.
Yeah, and when I saw Ledbetter's comments, my initial reaction was, how long does it take to vote yes? I mean, that should be easy. But other than that, seriously, it just tells me that this is not a priority with them. If it was a priority, then there would be time and they would have made time. But this is just more evidence that it's really not a priority, right?
Yeah, I mean, and I don't think it is until parents punish them. And what I mean by that is, and I think that's coming, right? I think that what parents have seen during the pandemic is, man, I'm not super excited about what I saw when I had to have my kid at home and paying a little bit more attention to what they were being taught, how they were being taught. And I want different choices. And now we're in a situation where they can demand that. But what's happening on the other hand, the AEA has a massive political war chest and they're doling out checks. And so there is a political consequence to those legislators for going along with this. But they're questioning, well, is there really a penalty for just maintaining the status quo? And I don't know the answer to that yet.
You know, it's interesting you talk about the AEA. From what I heard, there was like over 40 lobbyists with the AEA last week just going through the legislature trying to convince people to be against this. And I'm thinking, that's a lot of people. That's a lot of power. That's a lot of influence that they're trying to wield. And what, I mean, is that why it seems like the legislature's so scared of them?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Amy Marlowe has done a masterful job of rebuilding the AEA. I mean, they've got millions in PAC dollars. They have plenty of lobbyists. And they are the existing system. They represent the adults in the existing system. That's primarily what they do. And you've got to respect them for wanting to protect that status quo. But that's not what's good for the kids in Alabama. And, you know, that's the choice for legislators. Are you going to protect the adults or fight for your future? I mean, you tell me which is more important.
Well, and that's kind of been my argument. You know, people say, well, this could take away from the power of the public schools. It could take away funding from the public schools. And my response is, I'm not here to defend the public school monopoly. Like, I'm not here to make sure the public school monopoly, the government monopoly, stays in place. I want what's best for students and parents. And if school choice is better for students and parents, I'm going to support that.
Yeah, and to the same point, I'll support a tradition. There are good schools in Alabama. There are good public schools in Alabama. And guess what? Parents should be completely satisfied by staying in some of those schools. But when you're at the back of the pack, it should say, in spite of those good schools, you have some that are so horrific and underserving kids that you're still ranked last in the country. And so nobody's saying you have to leave your options. It's if you don't like your option because you don't think it's serving your kid, you have a choice. And I think that's a big deal. So don't tell me about, hey, well, it might take money for this or that. We make financial decisions all the time in legislatures all over the country. This is just the reality. But the reality in Alabama is that a large portion of children in Alabama have been underserved by the education system that's there. And legislators should be ashamed of it. And folks like Kay Ivey shouldn't be able to just kind of sit on the sidelines and be quiet about this stuff. They should explain it.
Yeah, and I mean, she signed a proclamation for School Choice Week, and that's about it. That's like all I've seen of her on this issue. So I think leadership from Kay Ivey, leadership from the legislature is an issue here. But, you know, when you talk about, okay, public schools, they can compete, and you can stay in a public school if you want to. I think of Madison City Schools. Everyone tells me here in the Huntsville area that those are great and people want to move to that area to put their kids in those schools. So that might be an example of what you're talking about. But the other side of it is I always hear them say, well, public schools will not be able to compete if they lose funding and the funding goes to school choice and private schools. What would your response be to that?
Well, I mean, on so many of these things, if a school fails because it's not delivering for the students, what's the point of the school? Like, why are you there but to prepare children with the adequate knowledge, skills, and life skills to be productive members of society? If you're not doing that, I don't really care what the reason is. Keeping you around is not some sort of, like, civic hallmark. Like, that's something that we need to kind of get over. And down in the Mobile area, it's not a secret. I mean, there are a lot of folks that choose private schools because of certain public schools in the area. They say, whoa, I can't do that. I have to send my kid to private schools. That should never be the have to, right? It should be, this is a good enough option that it does serve my child. And when parents know this, but they can't do anything about it, it's here's where you live, You're tied to your zip code. Good luck. Next. That is not something that anybody should be proud of. And the Alabama Republicans are on the hook for this. Democrats don't have power. The idea that this is anything other than Republican fault is not true.
I'm speaking with Cameron Smith. He's a columnist with AL.com. Has a great piece on Marsha's Parents Choice Act. You know, another thing that you pointed out in this piece, which I thought was great. I mean, this is why I wanted to bring you on, because you made so many good points. You said, let's put to bed the idea that the remedy is achieving the ever-ending, ever-changing goalpost of fully funding education. And you pointed out that in 2018-19 school year, Alabama spent more money than Tennessee, Florida, Mississippi, and North Carolina, and yet those states had better achievement results. I think that's a great point.
Yeah, well, this is a game that we play in Alabama and, frankly, in school funding conversations around the country. This is the Democrat talking point, which is, hey, if you fully funded education, this would be fixed. And the Alabama Education Lab at AL.com did research that tracked this specific issue of the correlation between funding and outcomes. And what they basically found was there's actually an inverse relationship until you get to schools like Madison City Schools, Auburn City Schools, Mountain Brook City Schools, where the kids are well-to-do, high levels of parental involvement. Then, hey, giving those kids extra money, they get even better results. But they already had great results. And so this game that's played, which is if you just fix this current system, you wouldn't need all this stuff, just throw more money at it. Well, it's not money. It's who teaches, how they teach, what the expectations are. And frankly, the best option near some parents in Alabama is not going to be their local public school.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And, you know, one thing that that we were talking about a little bit when talking about Del Marsh's school choice bill is they added an amendment that would add a testing requirement to school choice. To me, I was kind of against that because, I mean, I understand why they did it, so there's some accountability, but I feel like teaching to the test is kind of one of the problems. And I also feel like the goal shouldn't be to make private schools and homeschool more like public school. It should be to have more options. But what do you think? I mean, is it worth it to bite the bullet and allow that amendment to stay in place so we can get this passed?
Probably not. I mean, I think this is an issue where my kids have a homeschool hybrid program. And so I don't mind, in exchange for the state supporting that, saying, here's our curriculum, here's what we're doing. I think parents who say, we'll absolutely not talk to the state at all, probably not a good deal. But on the same note, if you're saying, well, you have to teach to a test, you have to have an aligned curriculum so that your kids can be successful on these standardized tests and show that the program's working, well, you're just basically saying be more like public school. And I understand why a lot of parents wouldn't want that. So I do think that that amendment is a challenge. But we also need to say, okay, well, then what? What's the accountability measure for folks that are using these alternatives? What are you going to tell people in explaining how your choice is producing better results for your kids? And I think that's a reasonable expectation.
So are you pessimistic or optimistic that this eventually gets passed?
I think eventually something's got to give in Alabama. I don't know if it's this session, but I just don't understand why people would just generally be okay with hanging at the bottom and saying, well, maybe we're not Mississippi this year. No, dang it, we're behind Mississippi again. I mean, the results are objectively bad, and we need to be responsive to that wherever that occurs.
Yeah, I would agree with you completely on that. Cameron Smith got a column at AL.com about this issue. Cameron, I really appreciate you coming on the show with me as I'm filling in for Sean. And I know I'll talk to you again in the future. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
So when we come back from the break, we can take your calls on this issue. 251-343-0106. Do you think this bill has a chance of going anywhere? Do you think the amendment adding a testing requirement is a poison pill? No deal. We shouldn't have that. Not compromise on that. We'll take your calls next. Midday Mobile. This is Yaffe filling in for Sean. Back in a moment.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Yes, and sorry. sorry, this isn't Sean. Sean's off today. He will be back this week, but this is Yaffe filling in for Sean here on Midday Mobile. You want to find out more about me? You can. Follow me on Twitter at Yaffe. Yaffe's my last name, Y-A-F-F-E-E, or like the Yaffe Facebook page. And we've been talking about school choice. And as I mentioned before, this is a big time issue for me. One, because I can see the effects it has on education. But two, it's just one of those issues, once again, where I really believe Alabama should be a leader on this front. We have an opportunity here with the Republican-dominated legislature, and the school system right now isn't working, so it needs bold reforms. So we should be a leader, and it's frustrating that we're not. It's frustrating that we're not, I have to admit. And that's why, that's one reason I talk about it, because it's going to take you, parents, regular citizens, to change that mindset. We're going to take calls on this 251-343-0106, 251-343-0106. David from Mobile is on the line right now, wants to discuss this. David, thank you for coming on the show. What's your take?
Well, I appreciate you giving me a chance to at least voice what I think the major issue is. My kids are grown now, and they went through the public school system. I had three boys that went through there. That first one took us to even the third grade to get into the magnet school system. And after that, the other ones followed through. What I saw as a parent in the public school system is lack of parents' involvement causing kids not to do as good. And what I say that from is my oldest one, we had a hard time, took us, like I say, to third grade to get him in. And we kept talking to his teacher, and she goes, well, the problem is, I just can't go fast enough for him because the other students are not prepared for the lesson of the day. So we got an opportunity to go to magnet school. She said, take him. Let him go. So we did. And his performance went up. But what we saw when we got in the magnet school system, you saw more parents' participation with their kids, making sure that kids did their work. So that's where I think the biggest problem is too many parents are not ensuring that kids come home, do the homework, staying involved with their schoolwork. That's where I think the problem is. We may have a small issue with teachers, but I think the majority of the biggest issue is lack of parents helping out. And that's what I saw with my kids in the magnet schools, in the public schools previously, and with the regular public schools.
I think you're exactly right, and I appreciate your call so much. It is true that implementing school choice is not going to fix the problem. There is a cultural issue here as well. When I talk to teachers, educators, the number one complaint I get is discipline issues. That the kids, one, the teachers can't discipline, but two, that the kids are just out of control, and it's because of lack of quality parenting. And it kind of goes with what Cameron Smith was saying, that money doesn't solve the issue, that a lot of times you put more money in the failing schools and they just do worse, because the issue isn't money, it's the culture, it's parenting. I also get complaints about teaching to the test. So you're right. But that's an issue across the whole country, not just in Alabama. That's an issue in the whole U.S. And yet there's still states doing better than us. So I think school choice will help. But you're right. I talk to educators. The number one issue is parents. The one good thing, though, that I will say came out of COVID when it came to education, even though they failed so much, is it did force a lot of parents to wake up to what was going on in the school system, to be more involved in their child's education. And we're seeing more parent involvement in some of these things when it comes to critical race theory, mask mandates, but other things as well. And it's funny how we've seen more involvement from parents, say in like Virginia, where they were able to vote in a Republican governor because of education was a big issue. And yet the left and some of the elites are upset that parents are involved now. Parents shouldn't be in charge of what curriculum there is. They shouldn't have a say. It's up to the experts to have a say in that, you know. It's up to us, the elites, to tell you. So parents finally get more involved and want to say and are upset at some of the curriculum, and they want to be more involved. And then the elites on the left say, no, you sit down. You shut up. So we'll talk more about this later on. You're listening to Midday Mobile. This is Yappy filling in for Sean Sullivan here on FM 106.5. One more hour to go. We'll be back.